A very big aloha. It's so good to meet David Arkenstone. I've heard so much about you for a long time. I've heard about your music. I've listened to your music, and you know, five-time Grammy nominee, and someone who's just a master wizard creator. And really, I guess you just love creating music, 'cause 60 albums out, about 60 albums out.
About that many.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's what I do every day. I just love it. So it ended up being on albums. And luckily for me, a lot of people love it too.
So do you really try to get to that recording every day? You get to something, some music comes to you every
I
day?
try to make some music. I don't necessarily record it every day, but I try to come up with something. You know, right now I'm trying to learn the tunes that we're going to play on tour because I haven't played them in a while. So I got to refresh
Well,
myself.
they're beautiful. I mean, you have a lot of elements that people will be seeing, that it's going to be a magical kind of Christmas adventure tour. You're starting real soon, December 1st, landing in Sedona on December 16th after doing Phoenix. And what a, you know, you're hitting some lovely, very enchanting cities on the way. I guess, did you
Oh,
have to pick the places you wanted to go on this tour?
not necessarily. I knew I wanted to play in the Denver area and north of that in Fort Collins and a couple of mountain towns. So we just started there and then we ended up with 10 shows there. So it's
Wow.
pretty cool.
Yeah, very. And you're going to be in weather. You're going to have some weather.
They have weather already.
They are.
So yeah, we're playing. I got new tires for the truck, so no. We're planning for that.
You drive yourself? You have your own truck and you drive yourself? No? You're going to
No, I don't want to do
have a
that.
friend
I don't
drive.
really do that. I was
Yeah.
kind of kidding with
Yeah,
that.
no, it's pretty adventuresome, actually, this one.
Yeah, it's kind of a bunch of gypsies going into the snow, but I love the snow and I love playing the music with the atmosphere around it. You know, and we play a lot in California. I haven't done Hawaii yet. But it's just a different vibe when you have no when there's just palm trees alone, which I love palm trees. But when you go someplace that has mountains and snow and you know it takes a it's a commitment to get there. It just makes the show just a little bit more intense.
Well, you have quite a few followers, but and through many different avenues, because you've got cinematic style music, and at the same time, I guess you've ventured, you know, into all kinds of realms that even in the video games you do, you literally venture. And
Yes.
you've done the Celtic and the Druid, and there's influences of that in your music. And it seems like even in this concert you're doing, you have some scenery and you have a bit of that feeling with your four-piece band, able to kind of move with you through a lot of realms of music, correct?
Yeah, I try to mix it up. You know, I've written a lot of what I would call wintry music. So we do, you know, four or five of those kinds of songs. And then we do some arrangements that I've done of songs that people will actually recognize. So that's fun too. And I just kind of mix that up. And it's kind of a festive show. It's not sleepy, let's put it that way. I mean, there's some introspective songs because sometimes winter can be that way, you know, especially if you're alone and you're just looking out at the snow and it's, you know, like people now in the north, right now in the Northeast are just buried by like feet of snow. And I'm thinking, I hope you don't have to go anywhere, but they think about that, you know, ahead of time and stock up, you know, or you get your generator out or whatever. And we don't have to do that so much in California, but it was not that I was jealous that they got so much snow, but I appreciated the atmosphere that they
I
spent.
was raised in the Hollywood Hills in Los Angeles, and I didn't see snow until I was about 14 for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was like I loved it so much. And people who knew snow grew up in snow, you're crazy. We hate snow. It's like, oh my gosh,
Yeah.
it's so beautiful. Look at, and I remember going to Sedona a few years back, and I was staying at a place just near where the radio station was. And I got up early, as I always do. I look out the window. It's like, oh my goodness.
Oh, boy.
I literally ran outside and took pictures. It was still dark out of the snow.
Oh, gosh.
And Sedona, when it snows against the red rocks, oh my gosh.
I've seen that. It's very inspirational and beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the realms of music you travel through, because you do have, now it's called more fantasy, but I call it mystical. And you seem to be able to enjoy traveling into different dimensions or different areas of the maybe astral realm or different kinds of realms. And you even, you know, realize that you're doing these journeys, because a lot of the people who listen to you, you know, appreciate the journeys you take them on. So where do you set your compass to take that journey you're going to take musically?
I think every day I look for a combination of sounds or rhythms or something when I start, if I'm working on a project, because I personally like to go on a little journey in each song. You know, somebody said, you know, you'd be going along for a couple minutes, then all of a sudden you left turn in your music. But I love that, you know, even if I come back to where we had been, even if it's in a different key or something, I just like going somewhere. And then once I get something, I think maybe there's a title in there, and then I can sort of finish the painting, the sound painting or whatever I'm doing. But I do like to take those journeys. You know, I don't like to just, I like it to go somewhere. And I think that's what people like about my music, and always have since the first album. So I've been very fortunate. I'm very grateful for that.
Do you feel it's spirit guiding you, or you have a muse, you have a certain guardian that you can connect with? Or, I mean, how do you feel that you're being guided through those journeys?
I think I'm inspired by so many things that I don't think I'm going to run out of stuff. And plus, when you're playing, whether it's piano or guitar, or you're just doing a drum beat, you do feel like you're maybe have been there before a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's only so many notes on the piano. So, you know, whether it's your song or you've heard a song or whatever gets you inspired to do your own piece. You know, I think I have a gift, but I think a lot of part of the gift, plus the gift, you have to have the craft, which turns that gift into something that's tangible. Unless you just want to make paintings that hang on your own wall, then it doesn't matter so much. But if you want to share it with people, you know, other humans, you got to do some stuff to it.
Well, and you make a point of having people play with you, even though we were just talking about the expense these days of going on the road. Hotels cost more, everything costs more. You know, you've got three or four other people in the band.
Four other people.
Five people of you. I mean, that's expensive, you know, and then of course the cost of whatever, and there's so much people don't realize that it takes.
Of course.
So hit the road.
And they shouldn't, you know, they should just come and have a great time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what you do. This is going to be a little bit of a fantasy, I would imagine, trip into what we want to imagine Christmas is.
Mm-hmm.
Because music, you know, unlocks certain doors in our mind, and it brings memories, but it also is the fantasy we have as a child of Christmas, right?
Yeah, a lot of that is why I do this, I think. You know, I remember my childhood. I grew up outside Chicago. We did have snow, plenty of it, but I didn't have to drive in it. So that was okay. And then my parents dragged us to California, which I'm happy they did too. But a lot of memories I have of Christmas are from when I was a child. And I think a lot of people, you know, it's just a sort of a magical time, you know, for some reason, you know, even with all the stuff that's in the world, somehow there's a spirit that happens around that time, you know, whether it's from the harvest or whatever it is years ago, or it's stuff flowing through us. There is a definite sort of holiday end of the year vibe that happens. And I like to tap into that.
I just wrote a book about that, The Christmas Gift, I called it. But it's all about, you know, the amazing time that is just actually all religions, you know, celebrate. There's a festival of lights. There's the all these different people recognize the light is needed at the darkest time of the year. And there is a certain light Christmas. There's an amazing clear light that comes through, you know.
Yes.
And it's part of this, you know, music. For me, sometimes it's so busy, it's hard to get into it. But, you know, if you just stop and listen to some really inspired Christmas music, sometimes magic can happen. Just, it'll literally stop you in your tracks sometimes if you hear something special at Christmas time, this music that rings true to you.
Yeah. And I even when I first started experimenting with arranging songs that everybody knows, which is, I wouldn't quite call it arrogant, but it's close, especially when I do things with Tchaikovsky or something.
Are you talking about the sugar plum fairies or the is that what Tchaikovsky you're talking about?
Yeah, sugar plum and Arabian dance we do, and you know, I felt strange about doing it until I heard some stuff by Duke Ellington, and I thought, okay, well, not that I'm Duke Ellington, that's not what I mean, but I mean, if he can mess with Tchaikovsky, I'm going to give it a shot. And because I love it so much. And I remember the Nutcracker from when I was a kid so clearly. I remember mostly, of course, it's a magical piece of music, but I remember wanting to know, I remember being curious about how something like that could even exist. What's an orchestra? How are these sounds made? How do they blend? Whatever. So it's kind of some early memories that set me on my musical path, I would say.
And there is something about that. You know, there really is. I remember seeing Fantasia.
Mm-hmm.
Opening scene of Stravinsky, the shadow of the great conductor there. And then all of a sudden, the great music, some of which I'd never heard before as a kid, you know, Stravinsky, wow. And all this, you know, Tchaikovsky's in there. And boy, once you get turned on to that, it is an amazing musical journey. And you have continued that journey. I wrote something, I always meditate every morning and I ask what might want to come to me. I never know. I mean, it changes all the time. But this morning I had a phrase come to me, knowing I was going to talk to you, and I didn't ever have this one come to me before, but it was called, it kept saying, the ring pass not. The ring pass not. Well, of course, we know now how big rings are with all the adventures that we have with the rings, you know, that are happening. But so I wrote, how do you pass through the ring pass not to where the angels dwell? Can you open up that space between earth and sky and experience realms of light to see visions beyond mortal sight? Can you hear the pulse beat of eternity and feel the radiant energy of God's heart while alive here on earth and reaching high to the stars? Oh, the blessings of being a mystic traveler who moves freely on cosmic waves of time and space, displaying a temporary human face. That smile with wisdom's age, breathing in the incense of rainbows and a rose with the heavenly name. There are no limitations if you hold the key that opened the door to the ring past not of creation's mysteries. So that was yours for some reason. And something, just listening to some of your music this morning, I felt that sometimes you pass through certain fields of energy to these wonderful magical places that now I think people are trying to find in video games and and the dragons and the dungeon and all those things that happen, right? So it's interesting how you're able to speak to some of those people.
Yeah, it's you know, when you start combine, it's I just liken it to painting. You know, you look at a painting sometimes and some people will just walk past it and some people will be like, holy crap, what is that? That speaks to me. So when I start combining sounds or just combining different things, rhythms or no rhythms, just orchestral parts, it kind of takes on a life of its own in a way. And I just have to hold on and follow it.
Yeah, no, I absolutely understand that, you know. It takes some courage to do that. I think it takes even more courage to do it and create it and put it out there, considering what expense-wise.
I was going to add that, you know, the courage, yeah, to follow it is one thing. To think you have something that people should hear that's another kind of courage for sure.
How did you first, and when did you first experience that? Because you've been doing music a long time. I mean, what were the Celtic songs kind of the beginning of your journey? I don't know the whole
history. You know, some of the first songs I wrote when I was 14 or 15 had that sound to them for some reason. That's before I even ran into the Chieftains, who I just became a total fan of.
Oh, did you get
that sound? The sound of a lot of Celtic music is so ancient. And I just love that. You know, it wasn't, and I love the Beatles too, but it was totally a different thing. You know, it was, this music was like transporting for some reason. And I did my best to analyze it and then put my own spin on it. And I did like ended up with 5 Celtic albums, probably something like that. And you just spoke about Earth and Sky. I just did an album with my ex-wife Diane this year called Avalon Earth and Sky. And it was really about painting that sort of time frame, and ended up being a very beautiful album.
People still just discover reading Avalon and get so, enthralled with it. And there's a series of books, but Avalon still is, beautiful. And it's still a timeless, it's a legend and a fairy tale. And all archetypal things kind of build around that kind of dream of Camelot, you know, and Avalon and what existed, you know, in that time. Again, that goes to the English roots very deeply, you know.
Yeah.
English roots, of course, are tied with the Celtic roots and the Druids, you know.
I think those stories are they're rooted in humanity. Even though there's magic and things like that and spiritual aspects to it, the stories that last have something to do with the human experience, I think.
I think you're right. Now, I know you've done some film work, I guess, and some TV. And you know, more and more, there's a need, and I know there's not as much money making albums anymore.
Nope.
It used to be. So I think a lot of musicians that are pretty smart now are getting into film, and seeing, and boy, you can make so much more money on one movie that you're in than you could ever make on selling an album. Yeah,
which also makes it more of a competitive place.
Good point.
Which is not that interesting to me. And I do albums now just because it's just a lifelong habit. I feel like I have something to say. And I think the body of work, as far as money goes, you end up being able to make a living. Not everybody, but I'm fortunate to where I can do that, you know. And then occasionally I'll do a game score, or part of a game score. And it's still the kind of music that I like to make. Only now it's maybe with an orchestra or something. And it's even like the last one I did, which is for a Blizzard game called World of Warcraft, which I've done for 10 years. We used a Sydney orchestra, and we were on Zoom just like this call. And I'm watching them play my music, but I'm, you know, it's just an amazing experience. But it's when I listen to the music, I think, wow, yeah, that does sound like me. You know, whether it's a video game or a film or whatever I do. I did some stuff for the History Channel for a friend of mine who directed like 1812, War of 1812, and some of the early pioneering frontier things. And I used the fiddle and stuff that I would have if I was doing a Celtic album at the time.
Interesting point. Well, yeah. How many instruments do you play? What do you play?
I play keyboards, of course, which is a gateway into many, many sounds on the computer. And then I play guitar and I play mandolin and a bunch of drums and flutes. I have a handful of flutes here.
You have flutes included in almost all your albums, don't you?
Long one. Yeah, I think I like it because it's super expressive.
Is that bamboo?
Yeah, it's bamboo.
Yeah, we have quite a few bamboo flutes. And you know, in Hawaii, there's a tradition with a nose flute. Have you ever heard a nose flute?
I've heard of it. Yeah, I haven't.
Played with the breath of your nose.
Yeah, yeah.
Very different sound, of course, you know, as a native, native.
Right.
Are very different, very interesting, spirit-driven, of course.
Well, the thing about a flute is that it's powered by breath, and you get a totally different phrasing than you do with a violin, which you can just continue to play for without stopping.
It's very smart. I have never... And I play flute, not great, I play for my own hobby, but I'd never put that thought together with that, of how it is different in phrasing because of the brand. Yeah. Very interesting point. And of course, Krishna, I think the only religious leader that has an instrument is Krishna, right?
Yeah.
I don't know the other leaders have masters that's having an instrument they play, but Krishna played the flute.
Yes, and you have Coco Pelli in Native American culture in the Southwest.
Dancing with the flute.
Yeah. That's an ancient kind of thing. I don't know what those flutes sounded like, but I have a bunch of native flutes too that are sort of been refined, I guess you'd call it.
And you have on your tour, you have what instrumentation being played by your group?
Well, I play guitar and keyboards and bells and handpan, which I really love. And then we have a flutist. She plays different kind of flutes. Regular flute, bass flute, which is an awesome sound. Then we have a violinist and a cellist and a percussionist.
Ah, interesting. You've got both violin and cello. Cello is such a heartfelt sound, you know. It's so soulful, isn't it?
Yeah, I played cello for a little while, and just wrapping your arms around it and playing it, it just vibrates your body, which is why I think I like the guitar, acoustic guitar. Although I like to play electric guitar too, but you don't get that same thing. But the vibration of the cello in your body, I just think is a great thing, special That's thing.
True, and you're holding this energy, like you said, this whole vibration is so beautiful. I mean, it's just, when I hear Yo-Yo Ma play, I will listen to him playing music and I just am blown away. I hear him play The Mission. He did a couple of songs from the soundtrack of The Mission.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, just.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's absolutely amazing.
He has a great group that he does once in a while called the Silk Road Ensemble, which is
just that. A movie about it.
Incredible.
Yes. Incredible. Yeah, it is. There was a documentary about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Because music speaks so many languages. And I notice in some of your music that you have, you use a language that is you couldn't have subtitles to, right? I don't think so. I don't know who could create subtitles to some of the words you put to music that are not what we consider our typical words. So, and you know which ones I'm talking about, right?
Well, I think we use the voice as another instrument, sort of, you know, not, I don't want to get bogged down in actual lyrics sometimes. And so one record I made called Lover, and we made up a language that was kind of cool
Vowels. I mean, you actually had different like letters that were.
Yeah, it took a little bit of work to do that, but you know, I think it paid off because we could use the voice, which is obviously another breath instrument, as another instrument in the orchestra we created. So that was an exciting thing to do.
Yeah, and then you don't have the definition.
Right.
Your certain words.
It's more timeless that way, you know. Like if you do a pop song and you're talking about the state of the world the way it is now, you know, in 10 years that might not be as relevant. Unfortunately, that may be true also, but it might not be as relevant as talking about a current event.
Could you do a rap song in another language? It'd be hard.
yeah
I mean, it's like, I don't know, that because I do think there are ancient languages, of course, that have been lost, you know, from other times. We don't know what
sure.
used, you know, we can imagine. But, you know, the more we find out about the ancient history of the world, you know, and how far back it goes, we have no idea.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, we don't really know what a dinosaur sounded like because no one actually recorded the sound of a dinosaur.
No, they didn't.
So we use our imagination. But I think with the Webb telescope now, we're using that same past imagination that we can only imagine into imagining the stars and imagining, well, okay, once I've been working in radio most all my life. In radio, through the transmitters, it's being radio waves that go out. And we don't know how far
that
waves go out into the universe. I mean, there could be, you know, how we have here, sometimes things trying to pick up any sound from anywhere in the world, you know, it's right. Like huge receivers, you know, wanting to hear what's, and if someone hears what's going on here, and they don't know the language, it might be real interesting, you know. I think yeah. the only thing they really could relate to is music like yours and other music that they might hear. And it's like, that music, I think, would translate very beautifully in the cosmos. I forget which thing they sent up in the sky, which was 50 years ago. It's still going out there, and they decided which music they were going to put in. They put Chuck Berry songs or something. It's like, I think it was maybe even the Beach Boys. But I thought, oh my God, you could have instrumentation and some of this beautiful music that we're doing, classical and instrumental and new age, whatever goes into the realms, boy, that could actually speak. that could actually reach someone there, right?
It's kind of mind bending to think about the universe for me, because when I you look at the telescope, the new telescope, even the Hubble, and you see things that are, the light is so old. You're seeing the light from millions of years ago. It's just blows my mind to think about stuff like that.
Yeah, there's that light was before most of what we were doing here is. And so, but except in the space-time continuum, who knows? You know, who knows where any of that energy can be transferred, translated to? We're just not aware of it yet. There's so much yet to learn. And that's what music for me is, that a symphony of the stars. I mean, the music I like is a symphony of the stars. I like music that kind of brings me to that universal level. And you seem to, in your music, be able to create music that is that feeling of symphonies. We all know to do a symphony could be, you know, the cheapest is about 10,000, but it could go to 50, 60. And so, but there, these days you can create electronic music, but you do a lot of your music still, not just you electronically, but do bring in, there is a difference. Tell me how you feel about what you could have done just doing yourself and a synthesizer that's really amazing and created, and why you still have live musicians playing cello and string and flute live.
It just, the technology has gotten so great, but there are still pockets that cannot be reproduced by a keyboard. There's so many things a violinist does with their bow and their vibrato. And, you know, the thing about computers, which is awesome, is you get this, you can make this lush sound, and it's really, really great. But the computer doesn't necessarily recognize a phrase of music or know where it's going beyond a few milliseconds into the future. Hmm. Where a player can look at the page or memorize it and know where this long phrase goes, where you're actually kind of speaking a language, the language part of music. And I make computer music every day. And a lot of what's on Middle Earth is mostly that. But then I had to bring in some soloists, because there were some pieces that just would not, I could not get to where I wanted to be without them.
You know, you just brought up an amazing thought that I'd never ever considered about the space of being able for a musician to have that, hold that space of a whole page and beyond, because most of them have played it. Before right. They've performed it, they've already gone through most of it, and holding that space is different than an AI could do. I mean, an AI could be programmed, I would imagine, but it's not the same.
It's not.
As far as the vibration and frequency that an AI could create at this point.
It wouldn't be able to guess. Yeah, you can program it with stuff that would be just like the person who programmed it. Huh? But it wouldn't have the scope. I don't think you could give it the scope or the randomity it would need to be able to go somewhere that nobody's ever gone. Let's
put it that way. Second, I've heard that phrase, to go where no one's ventured forth and seeing it across the screen, you know, like randomity. Did you just say randomity?
Yeah, you know, a randomness.
I know, I love that word. I've never heard it before, randomity. Well, that's one thing that AIs and computers do have problems with, is randomity. I'm going to use that word. Randomity is a great word. Because, you know, when I've done really probably over 15,000 interviews, because I've been doing radio since I was very, very young. And I've worked 7 days a week. And I've, some are recorded, some are not. But, you know, I never write down questions and answers. And I think randomity and spontaneousness have a space for spirit. I mean, they open a little door where you aren't locked in, right? I mean, in that little window of whatever, it's not written down that you couldn't have guessed, you know, an hour ago, 2 hours ago. You know, you don't know.
No. And there's a human aspect to putting notes together that I don't know if a computer can really do. I mean, you could give it a set of parameters and say, okay, make a melody that's four bars long, you know, using eighth notes and whatever. But I don't think it can get to that human, like testing out like I do every day, just like different notes against each other and chords and rhythms. I just don't know how it could get there.
I was watching The Man Who Fell to Earth. It's on break right now. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it. It's an amazing story about a guy from another planet that comes to Earth because this planet is dying. And he comes to Earth because he realizes Earth is also dying, but they could help each other. Anyway, so he's an alien, but he's having a hard time communicating. He has to learn how to communicate all over. But when he's trying to communicate, finally comes down to understanding the mathematics that are behind music that he could use in mathematics, translate to music, to get back to try to explain it to the planet where he came from. You know, there's a cosmic, there's really a cosmic geometry and calculus and all that. I mean, what Einstein and people were tapping into is numbers, but it's also music. You know, it's what music is got on the higher levels that is behind a lot of this, you know. And if you add the spontaneity and the randomity to that, you know, we are getting into something that can actually have an understanding of the frequencies. You know, you have to carry that as when you go on tour and you're doing that, you know, it's not something you necessarily have to think about, but you have to have all that in the presence when you show up on stage, don't you?
Yes, you do. And I was not a good math student, but there is a lot of math in music, and there's a lot of especially in the frequencies and the way they relate to each other and why instruments sound good together and why some don't, and why notes sound good and why there's dissonance and all that, you know. So you can choose so many paths to take when you're a composer, you know, and I liken it, I say, I like to make music I'd like to listen to, you know, which is not an arrogant thing. It doesn't come from that place. It's just like, I only have a certain amount of time I can listen to music every day. And 90% of that time is my own stuff.
So what led you to doing Middle Earth on this latest release after all these other amazing things? You're going to Middle Earth, and obviously there's a fascination with it right now, but yes. What did you do there?
I just, since I first read the books, I was just enamored with it. And I loved the where it went. I loved that world so much. You know, it's almost like the people who love Ren Fairs, you know, which I do too. It's like that. I don't know if it's a simpler time, but the characters are so rich in it, and the settings are so rich. And I just again felt, in a not an arrogant way, that I picked some areas that I felt I could bring some music to that would illustrate the place or the event or whatever.
Well, and again, there's some of the Druid aspect in that as well.
Yes, which is another ancient sound, kind of sound that who knows what that really was, but you know, there was music around as early as they could make a drum or a flute, a bone flute or whatever, yeah. Hit two sticks together. There's some kind of music going on that people, that was another language.
Absolutely. I mean, what's the best place for people to be able to explore your musical journeys? Is it your website, or do you try to direct people to one of your streaming sites? What do you like people to go
to? Yeah, I mean, Spotify is always great. There's a lot. I mean, everything I've ever done is on Spotify. It's not all organized, but I actually don't have that much music on my website. Right now we got the, we're promoting the tour, so all the ticket links are there and stuff. And there's a couple videos there, but you know, it's, I have some CDs that are available at Bandcamp still. So I still have some CDs, even though those are heading out.
So if you want to see your tour starting December and then going to some wonderful places, California, Arizona, Colorado, is there any other?
Those are the three states we're going to this time, yeah.
Lovely theater experiences. You picked some lovely theaters.
Yes.
create the music. And that's important. I like a vibe of a nice theater, you know.
Yeah.
You got some good ones in there.
Oh, yeah.
Now yeah. That go to your website is davidarkinstone?
Yes.com.
And that's, spell your name out.
A-R-K.
A-R-K-E-N-S-T-O-N-E. David Arkinstone and Arkinstone and Spotify and all the others. You know, it's you've been doing a wonderful journey through your music, and it's really inspiring. And I think people are going to love you in Sedona. The vibe there is just so right for this. It's just going to be really great at the Sedona Performing Arts Center. It's a lovely spot.
I love that. We played there before, as I said, and I love Sedona. I mean, I feel like that would be a place I could actually live.
Same with me. I keep thinking I'm going to move there, but then, you know, a little more work there on Maui. But no, I agree. It's yeah. A beautiful, beautiful place.
Well, and Maui's not bad either.
No, so, Maui. I'm not complaining.
Yeah, no. I know you're not. But Sedona has a spirit. You know, when you pull into Sedona from the road and you see the canyons and you see the red rocks, it's just like, it's a special place. And it's really fun to play there because I feel like my music is a good match.
Oh, I absolutely know your music is a good match. And I know it's December 16th, but I'm looking at what day of the week that is. Do you know what day that is? I'm looking at your,
Friday night, yeah.
So you'll be in Phoenix on the 15th on a Thursday. And then yep. A wonderful Sedona on the Friday the 16th. Is that the last tour on past that day?
Then we go to Tucson. We go to Tucson the next day, and then we go to California after that.
Oh, wonderful. Are you going to play back in California when you come home? It'll be right before Christmas?
Yeah, we're playing in Oceanside and North Hollywood, beautiful theater in North Hollywood, and Santa Barbara. That's the last date on the 23rd.
I love North Hollywood. Yeah, I bet Beth will be at that one.
I'm hoping. I haven't seen her for a long time.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. Well, it's a pleasure talking to you. I told Beth, I'm going to tell you, send me all your music so I can play it on KUOS. Because every single one of your albums fits there. And I only play inspiring music and music that's uplifting to the spirit on KUOS. So you fit right in that groove. And I thank you for the wonderful journeys you take us through musically that lift our spirits. And I'm looking forward. I wish I could be there. And if I land up in Sedona, I'll make sure I come. Friday, December 16th. It's going to be a very special night. I think people should get their tickets on your website as soon as they can. And this isn't a major concert. This is more of a beautiful family kind of setting with friends, you know. So it's much more intimate in the places you've chosen to play.
This is a little bit more intimate, which I like because I like to be able to see the people I'm playing for and the band, you know, we like to be able to make eye contact with the people. It's too big. It's nice too, but it's just a different thing. You feel a little disconnected.
I absolutely agree. Well, thank you very much. Wonderful talking to you, David.
Thank you, Cindy.
Have a blessed journey.
Thank you.
I think it will be magical. I do indeed.
Well, we bring some magic with us, so I can guarantee part of that.
Well, I agree. You will be bringing magic with you, and so is your music. Very magical. So thank you and enjoy. Aloha.
Thanks so much. Aloha.